Trojan fans, it's time for another installment of the Trojan Blast Recruiting Podcast. We give you the inside scoop on everything about USC football recruiting from the experts who know what they're talking about. Which players have an offer, which ones don't, who the coaches like, and who our experts like. And now, here are your co-hosts for the Trojan Blast Recruiting Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher Ryan Abraham and USCFootball.com national recruiting analyst Gerard Martinez.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Trojan Blast Recruiting Podcast. Yeah, it's been a minute again. I think I start every podcast saying that. It's been about a month, but we are back with Gerard Martinez talking some USC Trojan recruiting. We've been doing a lot of team-themed podcasts, but we haven't had a lot of time to do the recruiting stuff. Not a ton has been going on, but we want to get an update of everything that's been out there in the recruiting landscape. A lot of your questions have piled up over the past few weeks, so we're going to get to all of those with Gerard Martinez. You can follow him on Twitter at GMartLive. What's up, Gerard?
Everything, man. I mean, see, Ryan got me stirred up because we started with this Mike Leach conversation,
yes,
which I won't get into because I have a bunch of opinions about it, and it's more on the team side of things. But he got me fired up there with this, 50-50, it's 50% stupid. And then, the wishbone offense is somehow we're supposed to look at that as this brilliant offense that has standed the test of time. So, yeah, some interesting comments there. But, hey, that's what Mike Leach does. He makes interesting comments and he makes controversy. And that's why he's a funny guy and an entertaining guy. And he has no championships.
So, but I thought it was a great clip. It was funny. I think the point is, do you just feel like sometimes USC is running the ball and they like, well, we better pass it a few times so we have balance. Like it's like almost like an accountant thing where you're trying to like equal off the runs and the passes. Like that's what I don't look at that as balance. So that's kind of why I played the clip. We talked about this on Dan Weber's podcast if you want to listen to the full clip.
Yeah, balance for the sake of balance in certain games is not good. But there is, sort of concepts that go behind, trying to set one play up for another play and trying to dictate how the defense plays you. And those things, revolve around having a balanced offense, being able to run the ball, being able to do something that forces the defense to do something that gives you ability to counter that. So there's a lot more that goes into it. It's obviously very complex thing to bring up, and that's why we won't get into it. Yeah. I mean, I went on a rant there for about a good 15 minutes because I'm like, what is he talking about? What in the world? He's talking about this 1902 wishbone being one of the greatest offenses devised, and it wasn't a balanced offense. But then you also have to look at the time, and you have to look at, how things have evolved with offenses and defenses, and it's a bigger picture. It's just a nice thing to say. It's one of those clips that, Mike Leach makes and says, and it's to benefit his own philosophy and his scheme and what he's done. But like I said, it hasn't been a championship scheme. So, I mean, I think what he says, it only holds so much weight. If Nick Saban wants to get on there and start talking about how, we shouldn't pass the ball at all, or we shouldn't run the ball at all, or have an extreme view on things, the extremes are always tend to be philosophically those things that they get people talking about them, but they don't necessarily have much validity in the real world. They're not very practical.
Yeah. Well, okay. So we have a lot of questions, but I wanted to, since we haven't talked for a while, just kind of talk about what recruiting, where USC is as far as the stage in the recruiting process. We got, several months before signing day, the couple months till the early signing period and stuff, but when USC starts off 1-2, we saw this happen a couple of years ago, and then they, complete turnaround, and so that changed a lot of things. But when they start off 1-2, and even at 3-2, fans are not happy. They're, they look at the Arizona game like it was a loss, even though they won on the road. The way the team is playing, if you just watch them, it doesn't look like a collection of the talent that many of us believe is there. So how does something like that impact recruiting? If you do see like, yeah, they got five stars all over the place, but they're not playing like a bunch of five stars. And, does that impact recruiting? Does the record itself Impact recruiting, and specifically right now, what are your kind of thoughts on how that is all playing out?
I think the expectations of fans and media are always vastly different than the expectations of recruits. And the communication that the recruits have with the coaching staff through tough times during the season is always vital. And they are probably getting a window into what is happening more so than the fans and the media who are on the outside looking in. So they feel a little more confident because they have that communication with the coaching staff. And obviously the coaching staff is saying, hey, you know what? We got a freshman quarterback. That's going to take time to develop. And you can have counter arguments to, well, why do you have a freshman quarterback? And, you know, why haven't you developed a quarterback that you didn't have to have a guy step in straight from high school or a guy that actually should be a senior? There's always these little counter arguments, but these are things made from people sitting back and looking at the big picture that have looked at the football team for years and years and years, and they are college football fans. And you have to understand that a lot of high school kids, even the top recruits, are not necessarily high school guys that are watching college football to the extent that the media or even Joe Blow fan is. So some of these kids don't even really watch college football. So when you get upset because, oh man, you know, that Arizona game, you know, they almost lost the game and the penalties and this and that, kids are kind of like, yeah, I kind of watched the highlights on ESPN and USC looked like they're blowing them out and then Arizona came back. It happens. You know, it happens. You play football, you know, and you play for a team and everybody's played in one of those games where you've been up and then, you know, another team comes back and it's just sort of part of football. And I don't think any of that impacts or is very significant to the recruiting process or to recruits when they're looking at USC. Now, if you have a stretch of bad games and it's really about the direction of the program, that tends to be what impacts things more. If there's an actual direction and a feel that there's a downward thrust about the football program, then kids start to look around and then they start to have people in their ear and saying, you know, USC is really not going to be good. And what impacts it the most, the factor that's tied in with that, is the coaching staff and the head coach. Are they going to be there when I'm there? You know, this is who I'm committing to. These are the coaches that I have a relationship with. If there's this downward thrust of the football program and the direction the football program is going down, then inevitably there's the thought that those coaches are going to be fired and these are the people that I have a relationship with. So that's really what impacts things. A loss here, a loss there doesn't do that. Close games don't do that. It's really the end game of, okay, is Clay Helton going to be the coach at USC next year? Is he going to be the coach the following year, et cetera, et cetera? And as we know, and we've talked about, and I'm sure you've talked about with Dan Weber, I think this, you know, okay, USC drops a game, and you always have people on the board, the sort of vocal minority that's, we're not going to win any games this year. Oh, my God, we're going to lose all the rest of our games. I can't. How many times do I see a thread where somebody comes in and says, I don't see a game that we can win this year?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. We lost to Stanford, and Stanford's terrible this year. I can't see a game that we're going to win this year. And then they turn around, and they win a bunch of games. And you're like, okay, the Pac-12 Division South is terrible. The Pac-12 as a conference is not very good. Thank you, Larry Scott. Socialism doesn't work, and now we are stuck with this socialist parody of the conference, which is parody in both, it's a parody of itself and it's a parody in terms of they're trying to lower the bar to make everybody sort of like, everybody gets a pass. It's like a pass and fail conference right now. That's what they've made it into. It's like, hey, it's everybody's got, you know, eight wins. Everybody feels good about themselves and there's more interest in the programs and there's more interest in the conference because they're competitive instead of having two or three class programs that have, you know, invested and have the talent and have the coaching that are the top of the conference, representing the conference in bowl games. They've gotten away from that. They want to make, you know, the mediocre sort of middling programs in the conference better. And then in order to do that, you sort of have to pull the other programs down. And so that's what you're looking at. And so when USC, who is not playing well right now, you can't have as many penalties as they had and say you're playing well. The offensive line is slowly starting to get better. You're seeing more cohesiveness there, I would say, more synchronicity there, but still struggling. There's still things that you see with the snaps, and you do have a freshman quarterback, so obviously he's going to make some mistakes. there's obviously some things there that are not happening, that are not real well. Even with that said, USC, with their talent, can do a lot in the conference, and they can still win a bunch of games. And so if they win 9 games, all this talk of all the recruiting class and kids are going to see this and see that means nothing. It means nothing, because at the end of the day, Clay Helms is going to continue to be the coach, and he's going to continue to make decisions on who he wants to be the assistant coaches. And that's going to mean that the coaching staff as a whole is going to maintain, and there's going to be some holdovers there. And kids, like I said, that's the guys that have committed and the guys that have relationships with those coaches and they're doing well with, that's a big part of it. So I don't see it affecting the recruiting process too much. And I would interject that, you know, I kind of had a conversation yesterday at practice with Eddie Bubar, our good friend Eddie Bubar. And we were kind of chatting about things. And I said something to him, and I said, you know, Eddie, this would be unpopular to say on the Peristyle. And it'll be unpopular to even say on the podcast, but I will say it. And it does venture into the team side of things. And I don't want to step on Dan's toes or Harvey Hyde or your toes or anything. I know this is a recruiting podcast, but I will say this, and it goes into recruiting. I don't know that Clay Helton couldn't still be a guy, that Clay Helton couldn't be a really, really good head coach if he did go out and just hire the Daley McCulloughs of the world and get away from the natural and the very common nepotism that you see in coaching. And this is, you know, people, you know, they remember Pete and they remember a lot of that going on. And then they look at Clay and they see a lot of the same things where, you know, you hire a guy like Neil Calloway, who's his dad's friend, John Baxter, who is Clay's friend. You have guys that are there because of relationships and trust. And it's not out of the ordinary with coaching, but perhaps it is a detriment to the team and the coaching that they're getting. Clay Helton himself, he is, I think, a decent manager of things. I think he leads the team well. I think he has a good voice in the locker room. I think he's a sincere person, and I think that plays well on the recruiting trail and with the kids that are on the team. I don't know that he couldn't manage a team and be a guy like Dabo Swinney if he had the right X's and O's around him and he made those right decisions to bring in accomplished, qualified assistants and guys that would develop his players. Now, there's an argument. You could say, well, no, he can't do that for various reasons, and he has no experience doing that and this, that, and the other. And it does go away from the natural, like I said, nepotism that's in within coaching. And that's everywhere. I mean, that's every coaching staff. You're going to have guys that are there because of other guys, whether they were fully qualified or not. But what he did going out and getting Daley McCulloughs, a guy that he didn't really have a relationship with, that wasn't a prior SC player or an SC coach or have some type of connection to USC, we saw how that worked. And that was a guy that checked all the boxes, and he worked at USC, regardless of not having any connections to him. I think if Clay Helton was to make that move and to see there's certain things on the team that are not up to standard, there are certain positions that are not playing well, kids are not getting developed, and was to make those moves, I don't know that Clay Helton couldn't still be successful at USC. It's not an issue like with Lane Kiffin, where Lane always was going to kind of override things, right? You could never have another offensive coordinator come in with Lane Kiffin. This wasn't going to happen. Lane's going to run the plays. He's going to call the offense. That's the way it's going to be. And there was always going to be those type of issues. Clay is much better at just delegating and allowing his coaches and his assistants to do their job. The problem is right now they're not doing a good job. Does he have the ability to make those moves and bring in people that are qualified? That's the big question. So I apologize. I kind of went off into a team right there. But it does connect with recruiting, because I think he's a guy that could do well on both fronts. And there's a little bit of, you know, okay, if USC was to make a move, what the hell is that move? I mean, we've seen them make moves. You always have to look, you know, and you go, it couldn't get worse than the way they played against Arizona. I don't say that with USC and how they've done things with the hiring process. I don't say that.
No.
So I say, you know, if at the very least, if, you know, Clay Helton wins enough games, if he can make those changes and make those moves, I'm not completely convinced that he couldn't still be very successful at higher levels. We're talking championship levels. I mean, he's been successful, you know, to some extent at USC, but we're talking like taking the team consistently the to that Pete Carroll era.
Right. No, and I agree with you 100%. And I think, I mean, we just haven't seen his – he comes with a plan and a philosophy, and he's loyal to the guys that he's close with, even though, you know, you could argue a bunch of them should be replaced and you could do better. It would have been great to see like a Justin Wilcox did, where he hires former head coaches as both or current head coaches as both of his coordinators. I just don't see a lot of head coaches on this staff right now. But if he did, it wouldn't just be about, and I agree with you. I think he'd be a great manager of that if he felt confident enough to go hire people like that, but they would also come with different ideas. They're not just like looking up to him. You bring in a you know, really experienced whatever, you know, and you bring him in and the coach is like, you know what, if it's a new offensive line coach or whatever, like, hey coach, you know, we've been getting pushed around. I want to go full pads an extra day this week in practice. Let's do it. And just stumbling like that. And then they change a little something there. Anything like that, I think would help. The problem is, Gerard, I don't know if he's going to have time to fix that. I think it's either going to be all in, or, you know, this, you know, you're good or you're not. Like it works and he sticks around longer and they probably don't change anything, or it doesn't work and like everybody's gone. I'm not sure there's going to be a chance to fix that.
Yeah, no, it's possible. It's possible. I mean, we and again, we'll dive into more team stuff, and we talked about this on the Peristyle a lot. And there's a good group of guys that are following along and reading between the lines, and some guys that even have their own sources, even with the administration and people that they talk to, that understand that the big question always comes down to, you know, how invested is USC in the process of having a championship football team. And we, you know, from evidence, you know, empirically, it looks like they're not invested at all. They don't care. There's nothing there to suggest that they are, you know, going out of their way to look at guys that have won championships and bringing them in and interviewing for them. Even with Clay and his staff, you know, there's been some questions about how much they've, you know, supported the support staff and some of the smaller things that maybe the public doesn't see that really help the football team. And so you get into that argument as well. If they really do decide they're going to clean house, it has to be sort of a unilateral move. And can it happen with an 8-win team? Can it happen with a 9-win team, you know, within the context of looking at the Pac-12 South and saying, okay, you can still win 8 games and be a bad football team? I tend to feel like no way. that's kind of my answer, having seen again the empirical evidence that has been laid before us in previous coaching hires and the way things have gone at USC in general. I mean, even some of the things outside of football that we've seen, the culture there, you kind of question whether that's a move that they would make. A lot of people, you know, constantly talk to me about Lynn Swann and what Lynn Swann's thinking, and I just roll my eyes. I think that this goes way above Lynn Swann, just like it went above Pat Hayden. I think if anything gets done, it happens with the BOT, and it may have to happen the way it happened at UCLA, where you had sort of a rogue booster that came in and decided, look it, I'm going to front the football program right now. I'm going to be my own Phil Knight at Nike, and I'm going to go after the guy that I think is going to be the savior for the football program, and I'm going to put that money into it. And that was Casey Wasserman at UCLA, who put all that money up front to build the football facility. And he said, hey, you know what? I got a nice football facility there. I want to have a good football team in it. So I'm going to go out, and I'm going to go around Dan Guerrero. I'm going to go above the UCLA administration, and I'm going to hire this guy. I'm going to start talking to Chip Kelly. I'm going to make this deal. And he did. He did that. He did that himself. That was him spearheading that. That was not the UCLA administration. That was not anybody, you know, athletic directors or anybody that was involved with UCLA directly. That was kind of his own private enterprise that he decided to go do. And that would have to happen, I think, at USC to some extent. And people have dropped names of guys that are capable of doing that. And I think they certainly do have enough private money to do so. I just haven't gotten the idea that the BOT is interested in doing that or aware enough to do that. You know, there's been some comments made from the BOT just about the university in general that make you kind of head scratch, and they seem a bit disconnected on things going on when you get into the Nakia stuff. So I don't know. That's again, we're venturing farther and farther away from recruiting, but that's the sort of the things that happen when you start talking about USC and the direction of the program, which that is connected to recruiting. That is where recruiting is going, and you want to know how recruiting is going. It's again, it's the longer kind of trajectory of the program. And if that looks like it's going down, then you can start to see recruits look around and go, oh, I'm not sure. But that's not from a recruit point of view right now, that's not how it looks.
Right. It would have to be, I mean, I think the fans and everyone, there's just a lot of assumptions that, you know, there's just threads all over the place, and people, all the, you know, everyone, every podcast you listen to, people are like, who's the next coach going to be? So, but I don't think that's the thoughts with recruits. But if USC goes lose to Colorado, or Arizona State or both, or, you know, and, you know, going on the road at Utah, then I think it's more real. It'd be more mainstream, but, you know, we'll see that then I think it'll impact recruiting more. Well, let's get these questions in, Gerard. What do you think?
I think, what's the question?
Should we answer some questions? We have a lot of them here.
We should answer some questions.
All right.
That's what we should do.
I'll read you this one first. I have a buddy that works at Los Angeles Valley College, and he has told me, I'm not saying this is the email I'm reading. He has told me that former UCLA.
Is that your buddy?
This is not my buddy. This is the email I'm reading. That former UCLA offensive lineman, Stefan Zabi, wants to go to USC. My buddy told me that Stefan loves LA, wants to stay in Southern California, and would love to go to USC. He's a former four-star offensive lineman and is good friends with Levi Jones. They went to the same high school in Austin. Does USC have any interest in him? I don't have a name on this email, so I apologize for that.
Rapid fire, they don't.
No?
Nope.
What was the just a?
What not, was the reason? I think he didn't have great reviews at UCLA, and I think USC's just kind of looking for maybe somebody that you know, they've scouted longer, and maybe a guy that they have their eye on from high school. So yeah, just gotcha. I've heard that there's no interest there.
You know, one of the things that people keep asking me, like if you say, well, I'm like, the offensive line should be playing better than it is. And, you know, with as much starting experience it's back, with 3 years under the same coach, Neil Callaway, same system, nothing's changed. You know, it's not like the Zach Banner days where he had six offensive line coaches in his five-year career. And they have 15 offensive linemen on scholarship. When I say that, I mean, it sounds like it's a deep group, 15 of the 85. Is that a lot, you think? Or what's the number ideally for offensive line?
No, 15 is a good number. I think 15 to 18 is what you want to tend to roll with.
So even up to 18, you said you'd go up to 18?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think if you're running a pro-style offense, and you and I say pro-style offense very loosely, but you get a lot of attrition with linemen, especially if you're running the ball. If you're running a spread offense and you want to put maybe more of those scholarship numbers into receivers. I think 15 is good. USC, I mean, sometimes they'd be playing with like 12 under Pat Rule, and it seemed like, oh man, you'd always have a guy there that would have to play multiple positions. He'd basically do the Toa Lobondon thing, but he'd be doing that throughout his whole career. Because you just didn't have a lot of depth. And that was the one thing, and I know I've mentioned this before, but I think it's biting Pete Carroll in the butt now with Seattle, is that Pete just didn't put a lot into his offensive line recruiting. He wanted to use those extra guard and center scholarship offers for receivers and for cornerbacks and everything, because he always felt like if those positions didn't work out, if you brought in a receiver and he didn't work out, you could move him to corner. And if the corner, you know, you recruited didn't work out, you could go move him to safety or whatever. You could always move that guy down to another position. Whereas if you had an offensive guard that didn't work out, well, then he's just dead weight on the roster. And so I think, you know, you don't want dead weight on the roster, but at the same time, if you got guys in there that can be scout team guys and, you know, they're around for spring ball, they allow you to run your offense. They allow you to get looks He's a guy that's capable of being able to at least give you a look on a scout team. There's some value to that. And I think that gets a little overlooked. And so, I don't mind having extra offensive linemen. They get broken down there as the season goes on. It's similar to defensive linemen, but probably even more where they get bumps and bruises. And so, being able to have guys that you just plug in there and practice can be very valuable for you down the end of the season.
We got one. We got actually a few from Tark with a Q. We'll spread them out. But he said, well, first one, he said, do you see USC signing 5 receivers if Kyle Ford and Brew McCoy commit? And if not that, then which of the current 3 commits is least likely to get a letter of intent, since we know USC would take McCoy and Ford over the others?
Well, the first question, how many receivers will USC take in this class?
I'm guessing 12. What do you think?
In this class, there's 2 questions really in one, because there's the question of how many do they take, and then you say, okay, if they have an opportunity to take Kyle Ford, Brew McCoy, in addition to the guys that they have, who do you tell no if you decide you don't want 5 receivers? And then there's the extra little complication that we've discussed here in the past few weeks of John Jackson III.
He was out of practice, folks, right?
Yeah, he was at practice Tuesday, and he was there with his dad, and they have been consistently saying that John Jackson is going to grayshirt. So that means you're using that scholarship against the 2019 class. So that's another receiver that you're talking about. So that's 6 receivers now. Who do you say sayonara to? Who is there somebody there that you say, hey, sorry, but you know, we just don't have the numbers anymore? It's complicated. Do you say that to John Jackson, who obviously has a great tradition at USC and has been a great ambassador to USC, and his son is expecting to get a scholarship offer from a gray shirt? Do you say it to, you know, one of the guys that you have committed now, which I think this class is very talented. The one question would probably be Manure, McLean, and his brother goes to USC. But the question would be, is he coming in as a receiver or a tight end? Because I look at him and I see his body and I see a guy that could very much be a tight end, very much similar to Daniel Imatorbebe when he's healthy. But that would be kind of a question. And of course, USC fans are going, well, wait a second, we already have 2 tight ends in this class. True, but USC doesn't have much tight end on the roster. I mean, that's one position that there's really not any depth. That there was depth, it looked like it was a great position, and now it's sort of faded, and they don't have a lot of guys. When you're looking at Imatorbebe not playing, you've seen the transfer of Kerry Angeline, and you've got Kromenhoek there, and you've got Josh Fallow, and you've got Petit that's going to be graduating. So really, you've got Fallow, and you've got Kromenhoek that's kind of it. And if you want to continue to run, you know, tight ends, you probably want to be able to have more like 5, sometimes 6 guys on a roster. So then you can say, well, you know, bringing in got 3 guys that end up playing tight end is not so bad. And so I could foresee that. I could see you're still signing maybe Manure McLean, because he is talented. He's got a lot of growth potential. The word with him is potential. He is a bit of a project. He's got some weight to put on, but I think that, you know, looking at his brother playing defensive end at, you know, 240 pounds, and he'll probably be bigger than that, I don't think that Manure is in a place that he can't, you know, gain that weight and still be a very good player. And he's a good blocker, so there's a lot there that you could say he could be a really good receiving tight end. I mean, he could be one of those guys that's a legit good receiver, not just a guy that you put on the line to block, like a Kromenhoek. So there's that potential. There's also potential that maybe you don't have 2 committed tight ends right now. I mean, Ethan Ray has played defensive end and been a pretty good defensive end for Orange Lutheran for a while. You have to consider that. Maybe he grows out of that position and ends up playing more defensive line than tight end. So then you would be moving Manure McLean over to tight end, and you would only have 2 tight ends in that class. So there's a little bit of movement there, but you're still talking about 5 in the class when you're including John Jackson, and that's a lot. So then you have to go, okay, how many receivers does USC have on the roster right now, and is that too much? I mean, usually I would say you want to have 9 or 10. That tends to be like the number. So USC's got Amon-Ra St. Brown, Devin Williams, who both came in this past year, so they're two freshmen. You've got Josh Emitor-Bebe, you've got Keyshawn Young, you've got Trevon Sidney, and you've got Velus Jones, and you've got Randall Grimes. Okay, so that's what, seven guys right there. Okay, so that's seven, and that would be, if you bring in five, all of a sudden you're going to have 12 guys on the roster. That's a lot. That's a lot, but you're not counting Tyler Vaughns or Michael Pittman. Now, Tyler Vaughns is a redshirt sophomore, so he is draft eligible, and Michael Pittman, we've heard for a while, is going to leave no matter what. You know, he's going in the NFL draft no matter what. So we would be taking those two guys away. The other guy that I would see there that is a potential transfer would be maybe Randall Grimes. You can see maybe him leaving and going. So now you're down to six. And so if you're bringing in five, that would be 11. That would be, it'd be on the high side. And I think it's on the high side more because you're trying to bring five guys into a class, and that always is a question mark. You know, do you really want to bring that many guys at one position in the class? Same question I had with the linebackers. I wasn't a big fan of bringing in six linebackers in the 2018 class because I knew it would immediately impact any top guys in the 2019 class. And it did. It immediately impacted DeCabrio Floyd, who's a very good player that I would take over some of the guys that USC brought in on that 2018 class. Maybe an Elijah Winston. I'd probably take a DeCabrio Floyd over him, or maybe some of the other linebackers in the 19 class. And you're always probably going to have transfers when you have that many guys come in one class, because eventually they're going to figure out, hey, I'm not really going to play. So I'm going to end up going because I got all these other guys in my class. It's a little heavy. It's a little heavy. Usually offensive line, maybe defensive line, are only two positions that you can really go in and go, you know, five, six deep into, and you may not have a big issue with a bunch of guys transferring or issues like that. So that's one issue. The other issue I would have is that a lot of those guys that you named when you're talking about the 2019 class receivers, Brew McCoy, Kyle Ford, Drake London, Manure McLean, these are all big 6'3", 6'4", receivers. So they're all stylistically very similar. You're not really bringing in a bunch of different guys that can do different things. And so if you're going to have a deep class, I mean, and a lot of people have asked me this just in general about this class, who's our speed guy? Who's our guy that can get downfield? And I say, I don't know. I mean, it would have to be Kenny Christian, who's the running back, who's really more of a running back, but I mean, he's the guy that's got the track speed. None of these other guys are track speed guys. Puka Nacua, who's another very good receiver and a guy you look at and you go, man, I don't know if I want to get away from that commitment. That kid is good. He's a little more of a Robert Woods, more of a possession type receiver. He's pretty good running the ball. After he catches the ball, he's got some good open field moves, but he's more of that guy stylistically. So again, another possession receiver, but not necessarily quite as big, and he's not the big size guy. You could argue also, hey, we know Brew McCoy, there's potential. He plays outside linebacker, which is true. He could, but USC's recruiting him as a receiver, and we kind of have to look at him through that scope right now as a receiver. He's kind of similar to guys like Drake and Manure and Kyle Ford from that standpoint. So that's another thing I don't like about bringing all those guys in. They're all good players, but they're kind of all similar. I don't know how that works. Now, Kyle Ford, obviously, there's a great potential he ends up redshirting because he did blow his ACL last week or kind of 2 weeks ago against Mission Viejo. So that's something that we have to look at. Manure McLean's just coming back from an ACL injury. And like I said before, there's potential he ends up moving a tight end. So there's some movement there and everything, but it's a question that's going to keep going. And then you, like I said, you add in John Jackson and it's like, okay, that's a lot of receivers for that 2019 class. And, you know, John Jackson, I would compare stylistically more to Puka Nacua. Those guys are sort of similar. So yeah, it's a question. It's a question that's going to stay there until, you know, we get into December, January, and we see if somebody does shake loose from the class. I don't have any guys that I say, yeah, he needs to go for sure. Or there's a guy there that's kind of like an Andre Hunt that I go, I don't really know about that one. Mainly because I think with Manure McLean, there's a lot of development there and physical potential. And again, if you want to keep doing, you know, running tight ends, I see that as a guy that could potentially be a really good tight end down the line.
Let's talk about the defensive backs a little bit. I have a voicemail I'm going to play for you, and then I'm going to read Nick's quick question too, because they're along the same line. So here's the voicemail first.
J. JD from DC with this week's recruiting question for Gerard GM, defensive backs. With last week's news of the two transfers, I assume you would agree that Trey Davis will probably stick. But in addition to Steele, it looks like we're going to need at least two more defensive backs in this class.
It got cut off there, but Tarek with a Q also wanted to know, is USC still actively recruiting Trey Davis? And then Nick said, Big Nick 21 USC from the P, who do we recruit at safety since there seems to be an area of concern with the loss of Ross Bubba Bolden and Isaiah Polamalu's injury prone since being at USC? So maybe talk about the DBs. I know there's a lot there, but they were all kind of about the same.
Yeah, and I mean, there's not a lot to really get into. To my knowledge, Trey Davis is still a guy they're contacting and still a player that they are recruiting actively. We'll see if, you know, something changes there, but to my knowledge, that's still the case. One probably bit of news on the defensive back front is that Max Williams, 5'8", 170-pound, four-star cornerback from Sarah High School, your neck of the woods, Ryan, he's going to make a commitment Saturday, and we're pretty confident that that's going to be for USC. Now, Max Williams is coming off an ACL injury. He hurt his ACL at the beginning of the season, so he's out for the year and is going to be rehabbing off of that. But from what we understand, number 28 ranked corner nationally is going to probably end up committing to USC. So that will be an add-in to Trey Davis and Chris Steele, already committed at USC. USC has kind of picked it up again with Trent McDuffie. Trent McDuffie, the 5'10", 175-pound cornerback from he's from St. John Bosco, is originally from Servite, transferred to St. John Bosco this past year. He's a guy that it was interesting because USC was on him. Ronnie Bradford was actually the first guy to offer him a scholarship. Compared him to Adoree Jackson because he's done some track, he's done some long jump, and kind of gave him that moniker. But at some point, you know, kind of towards the end of spring and the summer, he said that, you know, USC wasn't really talking to him as much, and that's kind of par for the course at the defensive back position. We've heard that before. But just recently, USC's kind of picked it up again with him. I still think USC's kind of on the outside looking in. I feel like they're more, you know, like the third choice or something with him right now. I think he's looking at other schools, and he's got his teammate there, Julius Irvin, at Washington. And Washington has been really good against recruiting USC for defensive backs. That's been the one position that they've done a pretty good job recruiting against USC with Jimmy Lake there at Washington. Isaiah Rutherford, a guy that I've been really big on. Again, USC just not really recruiting him very hard. He talked about that with me, you know, really in the spring. Like, he thought, you know, I'm surprised I really haven't heard from USC as much. I'd like to hear from them more. And he was very articulate into the reasons he would like USC, and he was interested in USC. The ironic thing about that, and sort of, I think it's very, it kind of outlines that elephant in the room there, is that Isaiah Rutherford said he's not getting recruited very hard, and he's a defensive back. And yet, Latu, the defensive end from the same school, Jesuit up there in Carmichael, is being recruited really hard by USC, like probably harder than most of the recruits. I mean, Latu is quote unquote, coming from the junior day that USC had at the beginning of, I think it was like February. He came away from that saying that Clay Helton says he has a deep, dark love for his game. And so, you know, when the head coach has a deep, dark love for your game,
Clay likes saying like that. Yeah.
Yeah, you're going to be recruiting pretty hard. And he has been a guy that USC has been all over. So it's very interesting that you have on one side, you know, Johnny Nansen. I mean, that guy's been a shark. He is a really good recruiter, and he grinds and he goes after it. And he's got those connections, obviously, in the Polynesian community. And he's used those to really recruit USC hard. And you got a guy that's being recruited like that. And then you have Isaiah Rutherford, who is really one of the best cornerbacks that I've seen. Certainly, I watched him at the Adidas Nationals and was just like really just loved what I saw from him. He's a legit track guy. He's got some good speed in terms of that on the clock. And that's one of the things that, you know, I'd like to see more of with USC recruiting in terms of defensive backs and some of those guys. They're, you know, like, oh, he's a great athlete. And And you're like, okay, well, where is that? Prove that to me. Give me some numbers that tell me he's a great athlete. Oh, he's a good athlete. He's a football speed, you know. And you can't have everybody with football speed. You got to have some guys that are legit guys that on the clock can show that they have speed. And Isaiah Rutherford's one of those guys. So that's a guy that USC's not really recruiting and not really involved with, and they're on the outside looking in. Maybe that changes. I mean, with the defensive back recruiting, we've seen them, you know, like with Jalen Woodby and some of their guys, as they get into late October and they get into November, they start to get a little more interested in recruiting defensive backs and recruiting various positions. They become, obviously, later in the year, recruiting becomes more important for USC. And so we'll see how that develops. And if there's guys at that, you know, defensive back position that become more viable candidates to commit to USC because they're being recruited harder. I mean, Noah Pola-Gates is one guy that's already, they've picked it up with him. That's really been Eric Ziskin. Again, you know, you have Gavin Morris, who always seems to come into the rescue. But yeah, Eric Ziskin's kind of stepped in with Noah Pola-Gates and become his lead recruiter over the summer. And I talked to Noah Pola-Gates at the beginning of the year. He came out there in Williams Field when he plays for played Norco. And so I talked to him and interviewed him when he played in that game. And he said, yeah, USC's definitely picked it up a lot. Now, the interesting thing with Noah Pola-Gates is that he wants to play cornerback in college. He plays more safety now. So he's kind of a tweener, 6'1", 180. Very similar, actually, really, to Chris Steele. Because Chris Steele is one of those guys that could play safety in college as well. He's big enough, and he's got the mentality that he could play safety. He plays, I think, better football with everything in front of him, and that tends to be the earmark of more of like a free safety than maybe a cornerback. And so Noah Pola-Gates sort of fits that as well. The thing about Noah Pola-Gates, though, that's interesting is he's had some injury issues. And you look at his cousin, who's obviously had injuries, Isaiah Pulumau, and you go, okay, you know, we're bringing in a guy that's going to have more problems. He's going to be on the sidelines more. He's going to be on the field. But he is a very good player, and he's a guy that USC has picked it up with as well. Sione Vaki is a guy that now 24/7 is listing as a safety who got an offer from USC one of their passing tournaments, their 7-on-7 tournaments. And he's a kid that USC really seemed to like, and there's potential there. Now, he's a smaller guy as a safety. He's 5'11", 190 pounds, but he's a really good receiver as well. So he's kind of one of those really good overall athletes. Some of those guys really turn out. I mean, they really produce into really good football players. I mean, I just remember everybody talking about Lofa Tatupu and how Lofa was a quarterback in high school, and I think he played some quarterback at Maine as well. And he just had overall good athleticism, and you put him at Mike linebacker, and he can use that to be a really good Mike linebacker. And so a guy with Sione Vaki, who we just don't hear a lot about because USC was originally recruiting him as a receiver, and he was really ranked as a receiver, and you looked at how many receivers, we just got done talking about how many receivers USC is recruiting, you're going, no way that guy fits into it. Well, maybe he fits in, maybe a safety. Different kind of safety, like I said, smaller. USC tends to be, they tend to like those bigger guys in the defensive backfield. But hey, if you're going to bring in Max Williams at 5'8", running an 11-2 at cornerback, then, you know, hey, anything is possible.
We, another one from Tark with a Q on DBs. What are your thoughts on Cameron and it's Fabakulahan or something like that? 6'1", 180 pound cornerback. Has USC shown interest in him? Is that how you say his name, or am I way off?
Yeah, he's committed to Washington. Fabakulahan, I don't know. I've talked to him very much. He committed to Washington kind of earlier in the year. With a guy that USC wasn't really recruiting very hard, but they offered him a scholarship. I think it was like in May they offered him a scholarship, and it was kind of like, okay, he's already committed to Washington. And like I said, Washington has done a pretty good job recruiting defensive backs against USC. And so, you know, being committed to Washington, I think that that's a pretty solid commitment. I think it would be hard for USC to be able to finagle him away. There is always the location factor, and he'd be closer to home. And he did go to the USC-UNLV game. And so he was there unofficially. So that was something that you kind of, okay, all right, you know, that's you know, USC working in the right direction. And he does sort of fit in terms of profile more what USC has recruited in the past in terms of having bigger defensive back, 6'1", you know, 180 pounds, a bigger guy from that standpoint. So, there's maybe a little potential there. We'll see if he shows up to the Colorado game or games in the future. I think that's sort of always the indication. I've said it before, actions speak louder than words when it comes to recruiting. And so when you've got guys that are commits that are local and they don't show up to USC, you kind of look at that and go, that's interesting. It's the Anthony Thomas effect. or guys that are committed to other schools that keep popping up at USC for unofficial visits, you start to go, okay, no, that's solidly committed. So we'll see how that goes, and we'll figure out how to pronounce his name more fluently. Fabikulinen, I think is how you pronounce his last name.
It was something like, yeah, I couldn't really tell.
Fabikulinen.
I like it. Chris from San Jose, he said, these podcasts are the best. Thanks. Well, thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's cool. I don't care if they go for 3 hours. Keep them coming. Now to the questions.
Ryan does.
I'm okay today. It's a bye week. I'm not going to practice. I'm like, this is cool. It's chill. It's not like I have to finish the podcast and then run off to practice. I usually do a preview show on Wednesday, and we're doing this one instead. So it's, I'm doing a lot of podcasts. Maybe there's too many. I don't know, but we're doing a lot. And, but these are important. So we wanted to do them. And I'm trying to be chill today. So no, just let Gerard, if Gerard wants to talk a lot, talk a lot. It's no big deal. The part we did go 45, we should have recorded the first 45 minutes before we got, before we actually started recording, because there was a whole bunch of rants in there too. But
about Mike Leach. That was really the only rant was Mike Leach. There was other rants, but
we had other stuff too, but yeah. Sort of how the sausage is made kind of thing. He said, do you think the novelty of a new coach has now worn off in the eyes of high school recruits, coaches, and most importantly, to parents? Obviously, I'm talking about Clay Helton. Any smart football player and parent who really knows football can't be blind by the fact that the staff does not develop enough players to their maximum potential. The majority of these kids want to go to the NFL. It doesn't seem the coaching staff and the culture they have developed is holding up their end of the bargain. To me, it seems it's just a matter of time that recruits recognize that the name USC doesn't make you an elite prospect at the next level, but is the coaching that they will receive. Unfortunately, we all know there is better coaching and development going on at the majority of the Pac-12 schools and the elite Power 5 schools. It may be mean to say this, but I would question some of the intelligence of any elite player right now who chooses to attend this football program at this time. Wow. Thanks, Chris from San Jose.
Well, speaking of rants, now we sure Chris from San Jose is not a Cal fan, because it could be a plant. It could be a troll trying to get all the recruits away from USC. I don't know if there's really a question there so much as obviously he wanted to get something off his chest. There is the question of, okay, what's the long-term interest with recruits in USC, and what does it revolve around? There's the degree and the education, obviously, that's something that USC uses a lot of. It's the connections after you've gone to USC and being able to secure a good job in the LA market, which is important because it's much better to live in LA than, let's say, Tuscaloosa or somewhere off in, the badlands of the Midlands. And then B, it's getting into the NFL. And you're talking about developing players and players not developing, but USC is still putting guys into the NFL. And they're doing so even at a rate that's still higher than a lot of the other schools in the Pac-12 and in other, regions of the country. Obviously, you have your Ohio States and your Alabamas and your teams that are hot right now, Clemson's, and they're putting a bunch of guys in the NFL. But USC still got their swath, their little patch of ground that they still produce a lot of NFL talent, and traditionally they have. So I think that the elite, there's always going to be a handful of elite players locally that are going to go to USC, whether it be because of the tradition, because they've just grown up USC fans and because they want to stay local. I mean, a guy like Max Williams that I think was always really going to go to USC. As long as USC recruited him, wanted him, I think a guy like that's pretty much going to be locked in for USC. You could argue maybe the same thing for Brew McCoy. Something really drastic would have to happen for Brew McCoy to feel like, USC's not the school for him. He visited Texas when Texas smashed USC. I haven't heard anything different about him wanting to go to USC. So there are those blue blood programs that just are always going to have sort of their little territory where they're going to get some elite guys. It's really more with USC a question of, okay, can you get those guys that are a little farther out of your reach? We had this conversation on the Peristyle about Isaiah Rutherford. And, you know, it's Northern California kid up there, Carmichael, which is Sacramento. He didn't necessarily grow up in the shadow of USC. He didn't have a bunch of USC people around him. That's a guy that you have to do a little more effort for. He's not just going to go to USC because it's USC. He's going to go to USC because USC is recruiting really hard, because USC has won some games, because the depth chart looks good for him. You have to display that, and you have to put that out there for him and really demonstrate and present the opportunities for a kid like that. Or if you go even further and you're going out of state, you have a bunch of those type of kids that you got to work for. And there are positions right now at USC in terms of the coaching staff where I just don't think they have enough interest in recruiting year round to be viable choices for those kids. You're not seeing that kind of grindy, go out there, Tosh LePoy, guerrilla style recruiting where they're going to be on the kids and they're going to use every connection and every workaround to find that champion and be able to get into mama's head and to be able to work those connections to be able to get that kid on campus multiple times, so where you can make that commitment, where you can kind of put everything together on signing day and you can execute landing that big time out of state commit. That and it was, you know, something that Pete Carroll did at USC, but it was hard. I mean, it was not, I mean, they went after a lot of kids, and there were some guys that they just missed on in the South, especially where they go after linemen and defensive linemen, and they just kept missing on guys because it's hard. It's not easy. You have a lot of things, a lot of planets sort of have to align to get those type of kids. And so that's where we see USC. They're just not anywhere near that. You know, they're not in that mode right now of being able to go after those kids at certain positions. And that's where you start to see, yeah, the development and all these things start to come in to play that you just don't have to be able to sell. If you had that sort of drive to be able to go out there and sell on those kids, you know, the Jackson Carmans of the world and those kind of guys that are out there that you got to go and fight against Michigan and Clemson and Ohio State and those type of schools on neutral field. You know, we've seen what happens to USC when they play against top teams on a neutral field. Okay. So we, you know, in Dallas, we've seen that a couple times. That's kind of sort of how it is with recruiting right now. I mean, they're just not going to get those guys, but if they're playing at home and they're playing in the Coliseum, they've been better. And that's sort of, I mean, thinking about it, that's kind of emblematic of what they've been like on the recruit trail.
Let's go to Rick. He said, I wonder if this coaching staff will ever substitute or recruit needs. Why would a top tight end look at USC? All over the field could be said on usage. All over field could be said on usage of player strength. I'm not sure what he means there. Yes, they're young, but soon we won't find top recruits to attend where they're rarely used. Scary. Soon only lovers of Trojans will attend. That never works. Swanee needs to really think about coaching. Same question last year, getting old two seasons ago. Your thoughts from Rick.
Rick, a.k.a. Refund Me. I guess the question is, if you're not using a rotation of players, you're not getting enough players on the field, and that impacts recruiting, I guess, to some extent. I mean, he uses the example of the tight end position. When we talked about the tight end position, A, has not been very healthy at the beginning of the season. I mean, we've kind of seen some Josh Fallow, and then, you know, and then obviously Imator Bebe, who has been the most successful tight end in the Clay Helton era for sure, has just not been healthy at all. I mean, we're questioning if he's ever going to play football again. He was there Tuesday, not dressed again, kind of was there for a little bit and then went in. That's a tough one. That one, this doesn't look like it's ever going to happen. So you're basically with Josh Fallow, Croman Hulk, and Petit. That's your tight ends. Petit has been okay. You know, he hasn't played maybe quite to the level as you would have hoped out of high school, but he's not necessarily been like a huge disappointment either. He was a 3-star guy coming to high school. He was a kid that USC was recruiting when they had no tight ends. They're coming off of sanctions and they had nobody. They had a couple guys that were walk-ons and I think one other scholarship tight end. They had, you know, Junior Pomme, that whole incident where he dropped out of school. You had the Bryce Dixon stuff. You just had a bunch of bad, I mean, you had this great group of tight ends really kind of going almost into sanctions. You know, when you had, remember, you had Christian Thomas, you had Junior Pomé, you had this ridiculous looking group of tight ends. I mean, it looked like an NFL group of tight ends. You had like 5-6 guys. It's like, wow, that's the position right there for USC. And none of those guys just kind of just fell through the cracks. And it was, then you had sanctions and USC just never really got any depth there. And so Petit was kind of one of the first guys they were kind of getting out of sanctions, and Sark came in, and I think that was Marcus Tuiasosopo that was recruiting him because he was the tight end coach at the time. And they kind of started getting back on their feet, and he's a solid player, but not necessarily a guy that you're looking at as being some, you know, feature, Mercedes Lewis type of tight end or something like that. So you got two guys that are sophomores, true sophomores. One's more of a blocking tight end and always was and always will be more of a blocking tight end. Good player, but a guy that's, a, you know, 255 and probably going to play around 260 his whole career and be a guy that's going to block more. He's going to be catching passes, and that's Chromaho. And then you've got the guy that's really more the feature guy and follow. He's potentially going to be a very good player for USC. And you got Petit. So that position right there, there's depth also that's a problem. And then you compounding it with having a freshman quarterback in JT Daniels, who, you know, is not really focused on the tight end is really the last of the progressions it tends to be. And I know I'm kind of making excuses here. I listen to myself talking, and it's like, look, you've got Kerry Colbert now, full-time tight end coach. You use that position, that extra full-time position on the coaching staff for a tight end coach. And we've seen very little from that position. And you thought that having a voice in the room during meetings would essentially develop that position, and the ball would go to that position more, and that would be targeted more, and it hasn't been. But you do also have to always look on the side of, well, it's a freshman quarterback. He probably didn't throw the tight end that much at modern day. He's looking for number 8. That's been his guy, and that's how he started the season. And now we've seen him slowly start to progress to the other receivers. He's given a lot more looks to Tyler Vaughns. He's given some more looks to Pittman. Maybe, you know, he starts to give more looks to Petit. And if Fowler can get healthy, give more looks to Fowler. Fowler's really the guy that, you know, if the tight end position is going to go at USC, it's going to begin with him. He's the guy that has the NFL talent. He's the guy that you look at and say, if somebody's not developing and has the talent and has the ceiling to get somewhere, it's going to be Josh Fowler. That's sort of your marker that you want to watch.
Yeah, I agree with you there. He's, you know, he's the one. But you got some hands issues there. You got to fix that. In my opinion, this is from Robert, Zach Charbonnet is the best running back in California for the class of 2019. I know he's a Michigan commit, but is USC still on him? Do we have a shot at flipping him, Robert?
Rapid fire, yes and yes. Yes and yes. I think yes on both of those.
Do you like him? Like, where do you
like him? Oh, yeah. He is, and good pronunciation, by the way, is Charbonnet.
Thanks.
He's different, you know, obviously, than the two guys that they have committed right now in Jordan Wilmore and Keenan Christian, who are both smaller running backs. We talked about this, I think, last podcast, actually. You know, 6'2", 215, very aggressive. I mean, you watch him play defense. I mean, he's a kid that comes down and rocks people at the line of scrimmage. So mentality-wise and physicality-wise, he's a much different type of running back. And so, yeah, USC's been on him, been after him, and committed to Michigan. They don't care. They're going to keep recruiting him. You know, people told me, yeah, he's going to go to Michigan, and he's locked in. And, you know, Jim Harbaugh would have to get fired for him not to go to Michigan. You know, maybe not. I know USC's going to stay on him, and that's a guy that I think is a priority recruit for them. There's some other guys, actually, that are possibly in the mix as well. Maybe a little war room coming on that. We're going to see Chris Trevino got a little bit of an interesting tidbit on a pretty big time national back. And we'll see if something happens, if there's some traction there with USC. Again, I become a little skeptical on these things because I don't know if USC has that coaching staff that has those guys at certain positions are going to be able to go out and consistently recruit against these other top teams and at the same time display a product on the field that's going to attract those type of players as well. You have to have the planets aligned, sort of. You kind of have to have the great season, you got to have the depth chart need, and then you got to have that coach that can go into an area and either he's got the connections or he's got the rep or something that gets his foot in the door early enough that you can kind of work on that relationship and you can get that kid coming out of state. It's tough. So I am a little bit skeptical, but we'll see. Again, it might end up in the war room, it might not, but it's regards to the running back position.
All right, we'll check for that. Any updates on Kayvon Thibodeau?
No, the last that we've heard is it sounds like, you know, Alabama kind of is a team to beat. Mom likes Alabama. He took his official visit there. USC is, you know, they're kind of trying to stay in touch with them a little bit, but I've heard a lot of things that it's just, they're not feeling that recruitment very much. And it's a combination of just, you know, things that are going on in recruitment that I think, you know, some schools are kind of taking a step back from. And then also the fact that he just doesn't necessarily fit quite what USC is doing defensively. He's not really a stand-up guy. I think he'd be okay. I think he's better off putting his hand in the ground, being a weak side defensive end. I think that's more of what he does. Than being kind of a hybrid stand-up outside linebacker. But I think that's been a little bit of a question for USC. I mean, is he Johnny Nance's recruit or is he Kenichi Odizi's recruit? He's Kenichi Odizi's recruit, and Kenichi Odizi recruits defensive linemen, not hybrid outside linebackers like Port Augustine.
Speaking of linebackers, so Tarek, which linebackers is USC heavily invested in? And he also wants to know, is the USC depth chart the only reason they're not pursuing Henry Toto'oto more aggressively? He's a hell of an athlete at linebacker. I don't know how you say his name, but
Toto'oto. Okay. And USC. I mean, USC was not, I think, in his top five. He didn't include USC in his top five, and it is kind of a weird recruitment because they were there to offer him very late in the process. The teams that are in that top five again. Schools that had offered him, you know, last year, and USC kind of came in towards the end and seemed like there was something going on there. And then they got the commitment of Mananoa Tofono, which is still one that's a bit of a question for us. You know, I think he probably projects more of a defensive lineman, and then that's a little bit of a stretch to kind of try to project, you know, how he really ends up being at that position and plays at the position, because we haven't really seen him play that position. Or at least he hasn't played that position since he was a freshman. So you look at the other guys that are on the board and other potential players, and there's really, again, you kind of button up against that 2018 class, and that 2018 class is really going to impact the guys that you're going to be able to take now, because those kids are looking at your depth chart and they're seeing that you've got six freshmen sitting there, you know, guys like Paliye, who we're going to see more of. I think, I mean, we saw him against Arizona, and I think we're going to see more Paliye Yoteote in the future. I think USC is finding ways to get him on the field. He actually played, I think, some outside and was a little more of a pass rusher. He did a lot of that in high school, and so he's kind of moved around a bit, and I think that's one where USC is just they're trying to get him in there. They're trying to find ways to get him in there, and so that's a guy to watch. He's going to play more, and then there's some other guys like, you know, Solomon Tulalipupu, who's still not really practicing with the team, coming back from that surgery that he had. I think it was a foot surgery or ankle surgery. I forget. I think he told me two different things. And, somebody told me it was definitely foot surgery. Somebody told me, I think it was Shotgun that told me recently, which was surprising because I remember him telling me something different, when he was having the surgery last year. But he's been, you know, completely out of it. So he's redshirting, obviously. Elijah Winston will redshirt. McLean will probably redshirt. But you got all those guys sitting there from that 2018 class, and it's going to, you know, scare other players off. And so we talked about Laiatu Latu. He's an outside linebacker in USC's opinion. He's a guy that's a predator outside linebacker that, you know, when Port Augustine leaves, that's, you know, who they'd like to bring in. And they probably feel fits that position better maybe than Kayvon Thibodeau. You still have Raylan Goforth there that USC, I think a little more of a plan B guy, but a guy that does have a scholarship offer for USC. Trojans are continuing to contact and stay up with Mace Funa, who's committed to Oregon. He's, you know, the modern day linebacker that blew his ACL in rugby during the offseason. And so he was also at the UNLV game, and a guy that I think we'll probably be at USC quite a bit more, and I think USC still has a shot at. So that's kind of how it is. They have the commitment from Stanley Tafu again, where we think he's more of an outside guy, but potentially maybe he plays Mike linebacker. I saw him playing pads, and I could see a little more of the inside linebacker in him when I watched him in pads as opposed to playing linebacker at the Rising Stars camp, or I should say the Elite camp, not the Rising Stars camp, the Elite camp. But there he played really old Predator. He was all an outside guy. So, you know, 6'2", 245, a little short-armed to be an outside guy, but it seems like that's stylistically where he plays better. And we talked about Mananoa Tofono, who's, you know, out of Punahou, Honolulu, Hawaii, who's committed to USC, 6'3", about 240, a guy that not real fast, good player, good news for the ball, but athletically, you know, especially at the Nike camp, he kind of, I think, scared some schools off. I think a lot of people thought he was going to go to Washington, and Washington kind of backed off of him because of that Nike camp. He was not a sub five guy in the 40, and he just really looked out of place trying to run down some of the running backs in the cat and mouse drills. He just didn't look very agile, very quick enough. So again, I've heard some talk like maybe he ends up developing into being a defensive lineman, but you know, I've said this before. You do on the West Coast, you do have to project your defensive linemen. You do have to find guys that are going to be 240, 250 pounds that will end up growing into being defensive tackles. You'd be shocked, and you would think, no way, the guy's going to be able to put that much weight on, but it happens all the time. And so, I think with a guy like Tofono, if he's committed to it, I don't know that he can't be a really good defensive lineman, and I think that's really more probably where his athleticism lies, is being more of a defensive end, five technique maybe.
All right, we got one last one for you, Gerard. Mick in San Francisco, a little bit of a longer one. I'll read it for you. We all know ESPN is biased towards the West Coast recruits. Probably a lot to do with it is that they are lazy and they just don't put in the effort to really evaluate the players in this part of the region. Luganville's defense of the player rankings and team rankings is that they emphasize offensive and defensive line players more than skilled players. They argue that the teams winning the national championships are the ones that have the best interior alignment on both sides of the ball. So they're going to rank those players or teams that sign those players higher than what 247 rivals would have for their teams and players. For example, Luganville says there are plenty of good wide receivers, so somebody like Amon-Ra St. Brown should be ranked that high or valued as much unless they are quote-unquote absolute pro superstar in their opinion. Their rankings this year have 9 out of the top 10 players as defensive or offensive linemen. Do you agree with their rationale considering who is winning the national championships right now? Keep up the great work, Mick in San Francisco.
Well, I think ESPN's rationale has been business-oriented from the start. I mean, I think that in terms of rankings, it's very much in line with the Under Armour game, which they televise, and the guys that they are going to go see and televise during the year. I think it's pretty transparent as to, you know, what sort of moves their recruiting rankings. The rationale for how you rank is different from publication to publication. I know with Rivals, it's transitioned more lately to who's going to be the NFL guy. It's not so much, you know, ranking a high school player based upon what kind of impact he will make in college. It's more the potential he has to be like a first round pick, which, you know, among their own experts has controversy and debate. You know, should we be doing it that way? I think with 24/7, it's a bit more with, you know, who are going to be the good college players. But there's always sort of that NFL long-term, if he's going to be a five-star elite guy, he has to have that potential as well. So I think it's, you know, a little more, I think there's more debate when it comes to that. There's more openness as to situational, hey, we really like this guy because he's going to go and he's going to be an All-American in college. Now, how great is he going to be in the NFL? Well, that remains open for debate, but because we feel so confident that he in this situation is going to be a really good player, you know, that's really what we're ranking for and not trying to go long term. Where in other cases, you look at the potential and say, you know what, this kid may not really kind of get it until he's into his third year in college or his second year in college and the light bulb comes on. And then, you know, the potential because of the athleticism he has, he's probably going to be, you know, a top NFL pick. So I think there's with 24/7, it kind of goes back and forth a bit. And certainly because you have scout and 24/7 merging, you do have two different maybe philosophies on ranking, which I think is always a good thing. I think that when you do have sort of counter arguments to these things, it does end up being better because you have people having to look at things from various different perspectives. So, you know, with 24/7, I think far and away the best rankings, just because you have by far the most eyes on the ground and the most people that are qualified in various regions that are part of the rankings. You know, you have a strong West Coast team, you have a strong Southern team, you have strong East Coast team with like guys like Brian Doan, who've been around for a long time and done this for a long time. You've got a lot of strong publishers that go out to see games and are involved in recruiting and seeing things. Guys like, you know, myself that are out there, that I'm not a part of the national recruiting rankings. I don't talk to those guys regularly about rankings. But obviously if somebody ever has a question about a player around here, I've seen that kid probably, and I can have opinion, and I can give you various different perspective on why I think this kid should be ranked higher or why I think he should be ranked lower, etc. But with that particular philosophy of the value, I think there's something to be said for that, but I don't necessarily know that extends to receiver. I mean, I've heard that about running backs because you have more of a running back by mentality committee, and maybe because you have more raids, you know, kind of air raid offenses, you have more offenses that want to spread the ball around, and you don't have necessarily a go-to receiver, that the value of receivers sort of takes a hit a bit. But I think, I mean, that's a bad example with Amon-Ra St. Brown, because that's a guy that you can see is going to probably be a guy that's going to be a pretty high draft pick. I think he'll be pretty good. You could always question, okay, is he going to be able to put together the pro day? You know, is he going to have the speed, the clock that's going to excite teams and this, that, and the other? You know, his brother did, you know, Aquanemius put together a pretty good pro day. Aquanemius was more of the athlete, I think, of that group of the boys. Amon-Ra St. Brown is a determined young man, and you know, 2 years from now, and it comes time for him to start looking at the NFL. I don't know that he's just going to figure out, you know, what it needs to be done to put himself in the best position to be be drafted as high as possible. And so that's a kid that I'd say would be pretty special, and a guy that you would want to put ranked really high. In terms of linemen, depends. I mean, we talk about left tackles. Because, yeah, left tackles are always going to be valued and maybe even overvalued if you see a guy that has that body, because that particular wingspan, the foot quickness, the ability to play in space as a lineman is huge, and it's rare. And so that's always valued. It's valued in the draft. It's just taking the draft philosophy of, you know, left tackles, cornerbacks, quarterbacks, and maybe a rush end type player. You know, that was the big stink about Khalil Mack from the Raiders.
Yeah.
And the Raiders not re-signing him because of you know, he wanted more money, and Gruden's coming in. He's kind of trying to do his own thing, clean slate. And people are saying, dude, this is a potential Hall of Famer that you're allowing to trading off basically to the Bears for a couple of drafts for a couple of unknowns. And the question for me, and why I see it as probably a bad move for the Raiders, is because it is the pass rushing position, and that is a value position. That's a position where it's hard to get a guy that can be a game changer. You get a game changer as a pass rusher, whether he's an outside linebacker or he's a true defensive end. You get a Lawrence Taylor type. Those guys are hard to find. You get a lot of good players, a lot of solid pass rushers, but you don't get those guys. And that's a position that can affect the game, because that's going after the quarterback. That's a guy that can sack the quarterback, fumble. All of a sudden, you completely change the whole outcome of the game, for that player. Just like if you have a left tackle who's really, really good going against that guy or going against any solid pass rusher, you're protecting your quarterback, which many argue is the most important position on the field. So the guy that's protecting his blind side becomes very, very valuable. A cornerback is very valuable because if you get a really, really good cornerback, that guy can take away half the field. That guy can make plays away from his own assignment, and you get a Josh Norman or somebody like that, a Deion Sanders. That's taking away half of the field. That changes your defense completely. You can do so many different things. Mike linebackers, safeties, guards, running backs, they don't have that same impact on the game. And even receivers, you would argue. Receivers don't really, even under Julio Jones, you can get a few good receivers and spread the ball around and make up for what maybe Julio Jones does. And you can take away Julio Jones by bracketing him with a couple of good defensive backs. So I think there's an argument made there for the value of the position, and I agree with that. But I don't agree with just, hey, linemen in general and defensive ends and just, yeah, those are the top guys. No, you can't just do that. Broadly, it has to be specific positions, which are always going to be valued higher. And I think I think Rivals and 24/7 both take that into account. Certainly, the rationale for ESPN, again, you're talking about bias and all this other stuff. I think that, and that overrides any kind of explanation that you're trying to make about, you know, value positions. At the end of the day, it's like, who's in the Under Armour game? Okay, let's start there with talking about rankings.
Yeah, just having way more boots on the ground with the other two. So I think that's, you know, it's not some East Coast based thing where you just watch some film and, you know, you got people going to games all over the country for the other two. But, well, that's all the questions we have, Gerard. Was there any other recruiting topics you kind of wanted to discuss before we end the show?
No, I think we covered a good bit of both team stuff and how it translates to recruiting and how recruiting translates to team stuff. I think that's always important for the fans at home to, you know, be able to kind of bridge what's happening with the team and how it impacts recruiting and how, really more importantly, recruiting impacts the team going forward, because obviously it's the future of the team. So, I mean, we covered a bunch of different subjects and subjects that we didn't actually plan on covering.
That's true. Well, let me give you one a scenario. Okay, so month of September, 3-2. Now, the bye week right now, three important Pac-12 South games in the month of October. So Colorado's at home, Utah, always tough out on the road, and Arizona State at home, which they look better than I thought they would with Herm Edwards and stuff. If you picture this team, you know, after October, you know, winning all three, losing one or two, or who knows? I mean, I guess they could lose all three, but do you think that month, heading into November with the Pac-12 South, you lose like one or two of those games, then you're certainly not in control of your own destiny anymore. Clay Helton has a 10-game winning streak in the Pac-12 South. So I haven't lost the Pac-12 South game for a couple of years. How much do you think this month could swing what people think or what recruits think, more importantly, since it's a recruiting podcast? If it's a 3-0 thing and it gets towards, hey, you know, the Pac-12 South isn't that tough, looks like USC is going to win it again no matter what, versus the Pac-12 12 is not that south, the Pac-12 South is not that tough, but it doesn't even look like USC is going to win it this time.
Yeah, again, it's trajectory, and I don't think it's gonna impact things that much. Either way, I mean, an 0-3 is obviously bad, and then, you know, it becomes, okay, what if it 0-3 becomes 0-5, and Clay Helton completely loses the team, and then you get legitimate talk of, okay, you know, if they've lost so many games and then they could lose to UCLA, is there actually so much push that they have to fire Clay Helton? That's sort of the slippery slope you go down. And that's the slippery slope you have to go down to, where you're starting to talk about, oh, yeah, they're going to lose all these recruits and there's all, you know, there's going to be this big upheaval. Until then, no. I don't think so. I think they go, let's say they beat Colorado, they go up to Utah, they lose a close game to Utah, they come home and they redeem themselves as they seem to yearly against Arizona State, and then they get back on track and then they, you know, beat the rest of the teams that are on the schedule kind of as they should, outside maybe the Notre Dame game, because the Notre Dame looks like they're pretty solid this year. They certainly look like they're a class above USC. So it kind of ends the year like last year. I mean, you're kind of sort of in the same realm of, you know, you're winning the Pac-12 South, you end up going to the Pac-12 championship game, you get rolled by Notre Dame, but nobody really cares because it's not the Pac-12, and the sort of echo is always about the Pac-12. Now, I said this last year.
I think people would care. I think people would care about that, Gerard.
Oh, well, you say people. Well, you're talking about recruits, or you're just talking about people? I mean, people care if they go up to Utah and they only win by 1 point. They care. They win by enough. I mean, people care to say things all the time, but recruiting wise, no, I don't. I don't think that. I don't think it has any huge impact. I mean, Amon Ross St. Brown was at the Notre Dame game last year,
yeah,
where they got crushed.
True.
Didn't matter.
Did they throw snowballls at the players or no?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Matt Diteo. I mean, I'm telling you, it's not quite as dramatic for the recruits as it is for the fans, and it is for people that are just watching what's happening in the media like we are. They just don't have that knee-jerk reaction to these things. Now the oh God, I lost my train of thought. What was I going to say? Because you jumped in there. I was going to make some. There's a correlation between last year and this year.
You said it wouldn't matter. So like
it goes back to, again, to the trajectory of the program. And what I said last year was big deal for them was to win the Pac-12. That was really the step up. That was really the change. They'd won the Rose Bowl, but they still had not won a Pac-12 title. And the trajectory was, okay, now that's the next thing you have to do. It wasn't really the Cotton Bowl, winning the Cotton Bowl. It wasn't that. It was winning the Pac-12 title. Now they've done that, right? So winning it again is important because it really sort of establishes, you know, we are actually the dominant team in the Pac-12. People kind of still look at Stanford and Washington, I think, as still the kind of the class of the Pac-12 a little bit. Interestingly enough, even though Washington didn't win it last year, and obviously USC beat Stanford twice, but I still think there's this sort of residual feeling because of the previous years, Stanford had won it so many times, and because Washington actually got to the college football playoff last year. So if USC is able to win the Pac-12 again outright, I think that's still a step forward trajectory-wise. Even if they lose to Utah and they get rolled by Notre Dame, I still think there's a feeling of trajectory that the program is kind of taking a step forward and moving up, even though people would be frustrated over whatever losses that are there. The vibe, I think, with the recruits and with those within the program is that things are going upward. Now, the next year, next season, that I think really becomes more of the, okay, college football playoff expectations are a little more in the program and with maybe recruits. And if you don't get to that next step next year, then I think that it's like, okay, what do we hit a plateau? What's going on? That's sort of how now that's just my opinion, obviously my perspective, but that's sort of, I think, with the ear to the recruiting trail, the progression of things.
All right. Gerard Martinez, follow him on Twitter at GMart Live. Great stuff, Gerard. Glad we could do this again. We can't wait till the end of the season. We'll try to do another one or two here coming up soon, but keep sending those questions.
Wait. We're not going to do it until the end of the season. That's what everybody just heard right now.
No, we're not. We're not going to wait until that. We're okay. Going to do more. But send in your questions and topics you want us to talk about, and we'll make our time. We'll make sure we get these done. Does that make sense?
We will.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah. All right.
See, Ryan's. You know, he's got Keely and Shotgun coming to his office. He's just, everything is, you know, that's the office. He's trying to get me to come down to Hermosa Beach more often. This is what all this is about. And it's Not happening. I live in the Inland Empire.
You need to come. Come to Redondo. Come to our studio. It'd be great to have you in studio. People want you on Tunnel Vision. They want to do recruiting on Tunnel Vision.
Yeah, I did make a cameo in there, and I got the Keely. She came down and said, no recruiting. You did. You actually jumped into it and said, no recruiting talk now. Let's leave.
Well,
you've been exiled from this chat.
But we're going to, once the games end, we want to do Tunnel Vision. We want to talk a lot of recruiting probably,
Oh, at the end of the year. Oh, okay. I see where you're going with that. Well, yeah, potentially, perhaps. That would be interesting. Yes. I'll have to get a hotel down there to spend the night.
Oh, it'll be fine. just stay at our house.
LA traffic, man. LA traffic is brutal. It gets worse. Every 3 years, it gets progressively worse. But that's another podcast for another website.
You just stay at our house. There's no problem.
Okay.
I guess, that was just a blank, heck no, I'm not doing that. Okay. For the record, Gerard has stayed at our house before.
I still got to drive to your house. It's not like you, it's not halfway.
To the studio, the studio is at 0.8 miles from my house.
I still, but I, traffic wise, I still have to even drive to Hermosa.
Right.
To, there's no way getting around it. Until I buy my own helicopter, there's no way getting by the 60, 91, whatever freeway I'm taking there. It's still just bad.
Yeah.
Bad, 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 bad.
Well, we'll get you out here at some point, but for now, people can enjoy these recruiting podcasts from remote.
This is all they need. Look at, I've got a face for radio. There you go. That's my excuse.
Yeah. Nice. Me too. All right. Well, that's Jerome Martinez. I'm Ryan Abraham. Thank you so much for tuning in for our premium, for our VIP members only.
Trojan, roll your R's. Premium
Trojan Blast Recruiting Podcast. Thank you for tuning in, and we will talk to you next time.